Welcome to the Queens of Effing Everything podcast. I'm your co-host, Erica Helwig.
And I'm your co-host, Kenitha Amor Porter. We're sharing our stories of love, life, and business to inspire you in your everyday life.
Sharing our stories has helped us to cultivate strong relationships, build community, and level up as bosses.
We know these conversations will help you feel empowered to do the same.
Darling.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, we're recording.
We better record.
And we're back.
We're back.
Glowing. And like, this is the theme for October. We are ghosts.
We cannot get the lighting on the video going. But you know what? You know, we always have we always have tech problems.
Yeah.
So this is just.
We're not going to say that because in the new, we're going to master it. Oh, look, there we are. Hello.
You're so blind.
We are, but we don't look translucent. All right. We are finally back. We're super excited to be back with you guys. This is the wonderful Erica Helwig
and the lovely Kenitha Moore Porter.
We miss you. We took a little bit of a sabbatical summer to do some family time. And truth be told, well, our businesses are super busy.
Yeah. But
we're excited to be back and we're going to
dive with us.
Smell dog. The dog's tail down there somewhere.
There you go.
Super busy.
I know. Thank you.
So what are we talking about today? We're super excited because we just read this book.
It's so awesome.
It's called Lady Tan Circle of Women's by Lisa C. She's a fantastic author. This is based on a true story.
It is.
Lady Tan was a woman who lived in China in the 15th century.
Yeah.
And she came from a long line of medical practitioners.
Yes.
But during that time, women, were not allowed to do anything.
Exactly.
Especially practice medicine.
Especially
so practice medicine. It's this woman, it's very amazing.
Yes, it is. And you know, it's so funny. So if you go back in time and if you see any of those really, really old movies where women or Chinese women are binding their feet, we're talking about this era, even though the era went way after that. So this was in the early 1500s.
Get into that.
I know. And so there's so many great nuggets in this book that I absolutely loved. One is that even though it's not an era for women to do things that they're, you know, like become doctors or, you know, we were still in a place where you're there for a purpose, right? It's not because of your personality, but you're there to serve your husband, right? And his family and produce heirs, right? And if you didn't produce a son, which now we know is not on us, but back then they didn't know that if you're not producing a son, you would take shame upon yourself. So you would think of something wrong with you. And it actually was really the husband who couldn't produce a son. But it was very important back then. But I love the way that in her family, her father stood behind her mother, being a doctor. And that was they both were doctors, but that was very unheard of for him to allow his wife to practice.
And it's like on the DL too.
Yes, it is.
Because even, you know, so talking about the times, even the male doctors during that time were not allowed to touch the women. So if there's something wrong with Kenitha, her husband decides to call the doctor, but he's not going to see Kenitha and he's not going to touch her.
Mm-mm.
There's going to be a sheet or some sort of
partition.
Barrier. Yes. Partition in between them. And he's not going to even talk to her.
No.
It's someone else, the husband or
whoever. Or the daughter or the mother, who someone. Nine times out of 10 is usually a woman that's going back and forth. And if it's not a woman that can do it, then the husband can do it, right?
Yes.
But they're like, okay, what is your symptoms now? Da, da, da. And then they run back to the doctor and the doctor says, oh, well, ask her this. And it's the back and forth. Can you imagine? We think medicine nowadays, you know, we don't get the type of care we need. And we're talking to the doctor and the doctor's touching us. So just think when the doctor can't touch you or can't talk to you, right? But this is just like very eye-opening. And back then too, so her father was supportive of her mother doing that for their community.
And it then was his mother who came from the line of doctors.
Oh, you're right. It wasn't her mother. It was his mother, because her mother died at a young age.
Yeah. So her, she ended up with her grandparents. Her mother actually got an infection in her foot from the foot binding. Again, we're going to dive into that if you don't know what that is.
Look it up. I looked it up.
Don't look up images though.
I did. I finally looked at it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I needed to kind of see, because I was thinking something totally different than what they did, but I needed a visual.
Yeah.
And then I, you know how like it's a car accident happening, like you can't look away, but it's so
horrible.
I just
had your rubber then.
Yes. I just was like, oh my goodness. And I kept on staring at it like, what in the world?
No, you're right. Everyone should look it up. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But her mother died of an infection in her foot, which came about because of foot binding and not taking care of it. And so then she was sent off at a younger age to her grandmother and grandfather, who she didn't really know, but they were really good grandparents.
Yeah,
they were very supportive of her. And her grandmother was very into all the medicine, and her father was into medicine. She came from that line. And so after a while, her grandmother started teaching her and sharing with her, and she would write it in journals. And they were also a family. They had money.
Yes.
So they were able to do all of this. But it was, again, it was on the DL.
Yes. So I do want to talk about they had concubines.
Yes.
Right. And so what is, and I just want to talk about this because it was very interesting. So her mother had two boys and her, but because of what's the scarlet fever?
Pox. Right? Was it pox?
Smallpox. And her two older brothers died. Well, now she doesn't have a male heir. So then the husband gets a concubine to give him a male heir. So the concubine has a son, but the son is not the concubine's. The son belongs to the mother, right? So she does this, they do this ritual, and now the son is hers. So just even in that situation, I was just like, wow, like your kids, you know, you do everything you need to do, bind your feet, do all the rituals so you can become a wife. Mm-hmm. And even if you're a good wife, if you can't produce an heir or if something happens to your heir, then your husband gets concubines. And then if you're a concubine, you're still doing all that stuff. You just never became a wife. Mm-hmm. And then you have children for them to be taken from you, to be, you know, to not even be, you're raising them and you're with them all the time.
Yeah.
But it's that wife's.
It's like what do they call it? The honorary mother or something, but they all live in one community.
Yes.
It's like a commune almost. And so the concubines, they're bought. This is what they are for.
Yep.
Women are just property.
Yes.
And even the wives too.
Oh, everybody.
Yeah, everybody. All the women.
I love the way she said it when she was looking at writing. She said, you see a woman and children under the writings of the house. So like in a writing, I guess the way they do a house, it's up under there. You'll see animals like a dog, but you never see a man under there because everything was property except for a man.
Yep. And the man is the one who owns
all of it. Back in LA.
That was their sole purpose.
So what I love, and I know you're talking about the grandmother, but once the, I want to go back a little bit, because once the mother passed away, the concubine has to travel with her and her little brother now, which is her son, but it's not technically, it still belongs to the husband and whoever the new wife is going to be, right?
But that concubine is lucky that she had a son, because otherwise, her father remarried and went to go live somewhere else. So that concubine
would have been
sold or thrown out on the street or something.
Right. But then she got sent to his parents' house along with his daughter and son. And what I love about that is that, you know, even in this society now, we get pit against each other, right? Men are like, oh, I love you. I love that. And I want to see that. And why can't you be like this? And why can't you be like that? I mean, that's been going on since
the dawn of time.
Yes. But what I love that. But what I love is that that concubine took such a great care of her and really gave her words of wisdom on their travels to the new community that they were going to. I gave her, you know, was telling her how to kind of like preserve herself, don't be in the mess, like just really how to function. And you see it, their relationship, even though her mother's gone and that was her mother's, the concubine, they kind of had like a mother-daughter relationship.
They did.
Even towards the end, I remember when she was talking to her about her girlfriend, she was like, I never thought you would be, you know, that person.
Because as a child, she doesn't understand all of that. Mm-hmm. As a child, she just has her mother and then her father's concubine.
Right.
And as she, you know, loses her mother and they form this relationship and everything, and you can see in the story where it like clicks, you know, where she says, I didn't realize, but she's looking out for me.
Yes.
This whole time.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, there's all these things that women have to do. They're pretty much property. Let's talk about the foot binding.
Oh. Ooh, yes.
The foot binding. So in Chinese culture at this time, and this actually continued for a very long time, mm-hmm. and we'll get to that too, but women who definitely had more money, they were, you know, I don't think the
status.
Poor, yeah, they had more status. The poor women did do this, but starting from a very young age,
I think her daughter was like 4, 5, or 6.
It was like 5. Her daughter was, yeah, like around 5 or something when they did this, but they would do something called foot binding. So what they would do, I'm trying to like, how can we, foot.
Okay.
The whole purpose of it was to make their feet smaller. And the whole purpose of that is because men like tiny feet. Okay. So this is what they would do for men to get good husbands.
Yes.
Is you have the foot, the toes, they would bend under and break all the bones.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would bind the foot like this. And they would have little slippers.
Yes.
And they would have to walk on their broken bones. And there were different stages of the binding, right? And so at some point, the foot is getting deformed and this arch is getting bigger and bigger, which I can't even do with my hand.
So for listeners only, okay, so just, I know she's like, so just think about when you have your foot flat and then you take your toes and you bend them over, right?
Under.
Yeah. Right. And so you bend them under, and usually it's not your big toe that you bend under too, but it's just like the four. So just think about that. And you take that, because I was looking at all the different ones. So they don't start with the big toe. They start with the smaller toes and tuck them. And then, so you keep your foot like that. And then you just take something and bind your, like cloth, bind your foot up, and you start walking on that.
Yes.
Just try for 2 seconds, not long, a day, but just 2 seconds. And as you start doing that, it'll be like crick, like break, break. And yeah. then you're like, ah, and you keep on walking. Like if there's yes. no, ah, that's just the beginning part of it.
That's just the beginning part. And they continue until the top of your foot is like arched up because everything's folded underneath. And yes. they have all these stages. And the moms, the women, sew together these little pretty slippers and booties mm-hmm. For their daughters. Now, when they get married out, the husbands don't ever see their feet
no.
outside of the little slipper.
You always have your feet wrapped and you always have
a little slipper on.
So one other thing too, is that if you're walking on these little things, so our feet is as big as they are to support us, whatever like body shape and size we have, right? It's the size it is so we can be supported. So just think about walking on something that's too small to support your body. They used to walk in these little tiny steps. And they thought, men thought that was cute too.
Yes.
Because they wanted them to look like they're floating on air. Yes. And so not only are you doing that, but you can't even take regular strides. So you're taking these like tiny little graceful steps so you can look like you're floating. That's the whole point of it.
And then you're not really using your calf muscles a lot. So no. your calf muscles start to essentially atrophy and like disappear.
Yeah.
And women could fall and hurt themselves. And yeah.
Once something happens, so if you get hurt or whatever, that stops your chances of being able to get married off. They look at you like a piece of property. And so they're going to search and look at everything on you. And if they don't like what they see, they'll say no.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And it's the moms who are doing this to their daughters.
Because yes, it is.
Yeah. Yep.
But that's all tradition.
Because men like
people. But if they ever saw those feet unwrapped, I think they would have changed their minds about what they wanted to see. Because it's so horrible. And the pictures are, oh.
They're disturbing. So I did say, don't look it up, but you know what? Look it up. Look and see what these women
had to go
were
through.
Putting themselves and their daughters through because men liked little feet.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's so many traditions and cultural things that happen in the world. Stuff like this, you know what I mean? Yeah. All because men like little feet. And this continued. This continued.
Tell she's not upset about this at all.
Listen, you either love my size 9 feet
or you don't. It is.
What this continued well into the 1900s. Well into like 1946 or 49.
So something. Actually 14. I think it was even before that. But yes, this for millennial, right? So hundreds and hundreds of years, they've been doing this practice.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Probably still women out there.
That still have. There is. So when I start looking at, you know, of course, I can't just look at the pictures, but I want to read the stories. Yeah. So some women were showing, but they're older.
Yeah.
Oh, right?
For sure.
And they were showing that they're you know, their feet mound. So I was just like, oh, wow. But... so that was one of the things you start doing at a young age. Another thing you start doing to show that you were becoming of age is pinning your hair, right? So you did makeup. So your makeup needed to be flawless. You had to start pinning your hair. And the way you pinned your hair, let them know what stages of maturity you were in. Mm-hmm. And around this time, women were getting married at 14, 15, 16. So around that time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a 15 or 16 year old at home, can you imagine them being married and trying to have their first son at this time? I could not. I have my youngest daughter's 19 and I can't even imagine it. So, but that was their tradition and it wasn't, and they will be marrying grown men. Like it wasn't another 15 or 16 year old. It was someone that was in their 20s or maybe even 30, like, or okay. 30s or maybe even 40s.
And it was the same with the concubines as well. Yeah. So at some point, her Lady Tan, her husband gets a concubine, and
because she hasn't had a son yet.
Yep, she hasn't had a son at this point. She's had 3 daughters, mm-hmm. but she's still reasonably young. She's still,
I think she was 20, like
in her late 20s, early 30s.
I don't even think she was in her 30s.
Probably not. But yeah, she has 3 daughters at this point. And so she, you know, her husband gets a concubine, and his concubine was like 14 years old. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another child.
Yep, another child.
So one of the things that I loved about this was the relationship she had with her best friend. And it was a relationship out of necessity at the time. And then what I loved is that, so what was her best friend's name?
Maylene?
And so there is... So we told you that doctors were men.
Maylene.
Okay.
If I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Doctors were men. And then they had midwives. And so that their community, what was the name of the community? Something of Lights.
Oh,
thank you. That community had a doctor and had a midwife. And so when a woman was sick, they would call the midwife to come, and the midwife would be the person going in between, and she's the only one who can touch the women. It was
during childbirth.
They looked at, if you touch blood,
Garden of Fragrant Delights.
Garden of Fragrant Delights. That was the thing. Their community.
But the midwives were also looked down upon.
Oh yes, because they touched blood. So yes. Anytime you touch blood, it was like you were kind of the lowest of the low.
Even though you're bringing babies into the world.
And helping people, like helping save their lives, but you know. But it was very taboo to touch that. And so what happened is that, was it the grandmother? It was the grandmother and the midwife. So the grandmother is a female doctor, and the midwife, the grandmother saw that her granddaughter would need the midwife's daughter. Like, they were friends, they were kids, they played, but their personalities and different things. So she said, hey, I want to like formally make them friends, right? Mm-hmm. And make sure that they're in each other's lives. And so I love that. Shout out for that, because I don't feel like in this society, we have like a hands-off approach to our friend, our kids and their friends. I don't. I'm like, if you're around my child, I want to know as much about you as possible. Mm-hmm. I want to bring you in the fold so I can see what you're about.
Yeah. I think that's becoming more common.
People doing that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really? I don't think so.
Well, no, you don't think so?
I think out of all of my kids' friends, and even like when I look at like my sisters and their kids, you know, they know them, but I like make a point to spend time with these kids. Yeah. I'm like, hey, and it embarrasses my kids to no end. And even my son, he's 18, but he started hanging out with a new group. And he's like, hey, you know, they want to come over. Can I spend? And I'm like, sure. Cause I'm like, yes, I get to meet them. Like, yes. So they wake up, my son leaves them there because he's going to work, which was fine with me. I'm like, you guys want some pancakes and some bacon? They're like, yeah. Right. So I'm sitting down there talking to them. And so I get a chance to get to know them and learn them. And every time they come over, cause they all have motorcycles. That's a whole nother story, but, and they'll just be outside, and, I'll be like, oh, they're outside. They're out, you know, they're here. I'll go out and talk to them because I want to know what they're about, what, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I just want to know all of that. Most people don't take all the time. They'll be like, they'll know their name. Yes, they'll be like, hey, how's it going? And then that's it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, they know when they come anywhere near me, they're going to have to spend some time with me.
Yeah.
Like, we have a relationship with you and her. Like, yes.
Well, that's how it was with
Yes. And I love that because she saw that they needed each other. And you can see, like, you know, your children and you know where their strengths are and where some of their weaknesses are. And if you can pair them with someone who helps that the weak areas and vice versa, you want to do that. But what I love about this is that you see the relationship throughout their whole life. And it's not always pretty. It's not always convenient either, because now she gets married. And because she's high society, she's not supposed to be seen with a midwife or midwife's daughter. And so
who has big feet.
Oh, yes. So her best friend, Mei Ling, she says in the book multiple times how beautiful she is. She's like, she's so beautiful, but she can never marry well because she has big feet because she didn't do the binding.
Big, quote unquote.
Which feet. Is probably like, look at her like
normal.
Normal size feet. But because she didn't do the binding, that hindered her from marrying well.
Yep. And, you know, Lady Tan's mother-in-law, who is Queen Bee, right, in the community, she doesn't want her around her.
No. No. And in that community, her new community with her new husband and her mother-in-law and father-in-law and all of the concubines, it's just very toxic, right? Because they're all they all want the favor of the husband, right? Who is in charge of everything. And so they're all talking about each other. There's backbiting going on, all these different things.
You don't just have, you have multiple wives. So you have Lady Tan. You have her mother-in-law, who is, like we said, Queen Bee. But then she has, like, her in-laws. So, like, the aunties.
Mm-hmm.
And then along with all those women come all of their husbands' concubines.
Yes.
So you have... you have multiple wives. You have multiple... concubines.
Yes.
And the women are all hanging out together, embroidering, doing what women do.
Gossiping.
And being passive aggressive.
Exactly. And even though they're all in the same community, they still can't hang out together. Like, so they'll all be in the courtyard, but the concubines will be with the concubines. The wives will be with the wives and the aunties, because did they have, it was two aunties that wasn't married.
Yeah.
And so if you weren't married.
One of them, they straight up called spinster aunt.
Yeah. Thank you.
Because what was it? She was supposed to get married and then he died.
Yeah.
And she never got married. So they just straight up called her spinster aunt.
Yeah. And then the concubines, it was Tan. No, White Pearl.
Jade. There were three of them.
Yes.
So Lady Tan's father-in-law had three concubines plus his wife.
Yes. It was
green Jade, White Jade.
Yes. And yes.
Jade or something. They gave them names because, you know, they're like a dog that you pick a name for. Yes. But eventually...
She was
still able to.
So she was lonely. So she's coming into this new situation. The only person she knows is her father's concubine, who she came there with. And she is lonely. She doesn't know too many people. And they're all like, they're all out for her, right? Because she's fresh meat, right? Yep. So she's new. And so what happens is that she's trying to say, hey, can I see my grandparents? And they're like, no. And she's like, well, can I just see my friend? And they're like, no. And so something happens. What happens where she's able to see her friend? She was giving birth to her daughter.
Yeah.
And was having a difficult time.
Yes.
And then they called for the midwife and the and the daughter, and they came in and she they helped deliver. And then what happens after you have a baby, you have to be in, like, you have to stay in bed.
It's like
for 30 days.
So you're living quarters, essentially.
Exactly. And so because they were able to be there, she was taking care of her, they were able to reconnect. But what happened is every day she was there, she had been writing to her friend. And the letters wasn't getting, she had a servant named Poppy that slept at the foot of her bed.
Her whole life.
Her whole life. Just think of your whole life sleeping at the foot of someone's bed. And Poppy was giving it to, without telling her, giving it to the mother-in-law. And the mother-in-law was not mailing any of these letters out. So her best friend, Maylene, was upset with her because she's like, you say you were going to write to me and I never received anything. And she was like, I tried to, but Poppy, you know, I didn't know Poppy was giving it to her and Poppy took it to her. And she basically was like, you could try harder, but they were able to reunite. And she got a chance to see, because she fell ill, and she got a chance to see her grandparents. And so what I love that her grandfather did, which was out of the norm, is that he pulled rank. And so what happened is, and what's out of the norm is that grandfathers don't get attached to their grandchildren. So children are obsolete. They're just there. And of course, if he can't get, you know, if he can't be close to his grandchildren, especially not a granddaughter, right?
Because they don't, the men don't get into the business of the women.
No,
the
women business. You see them. So even with her father, she would see him for just to say hello. He would ask her a couple questions. She would answer, and then they would be off their way. So she would only see her father like a couple of times, like a couple of minutes in a day, right? And so for her grandfather, when she lived with her grandparents, her and her grandfather was extremely close, and her grandfather went over there and pulled rank and was basically like, my rank is higher than yours. And if my granddaughter, she is sick because of isolation, she doesn't have any family or anything. So I want you to allow her to come visit us once a month, and for her to be, her friend to be able to come and see her. And so I love that, because I think that was the saving grace of,
absolutely.
Because other than that, she just would have, she just would have died. She would have just willed herself dead because she was so miserable. And that's where you see the change in her. And she was able to start going and living her life.
Yeah. And so being able to go visit her grandmother, she was also able to continue talking about and learning medicine. Mm-hmm. And so what she ended up doing was, there was one of the concubine's daughters in her little community was sickly, right? And so she kind of had this relationship with the little girl. And
the sickly
one. Yeah, so the concubine's daughter was sickly, but she was spoiled, right? Like, they kind of let her eat whatever she wanted, gave her all these like sugars and sweets, and she was sick because she was so spoiled, essentially. Yeah.
She didn't have, she was malnutrition.
Yeah, she was malnutrition. So she, on the sly, took care of this little girl with what she knew from her teachings. And this little girl got better. And even though she was trying to do it on the sly, like, everyone knew what was going on, right? Because the women are like all up in each other's business, right?
And nobody can keep a secret there.
No. So she slowly over the years started taking care of and helping the women there. And even though her mother-in-law was fully against it, and it took a really long time, at some point, the community's doctor, all this drama happens with him and the concubine, and you just have to read the book because that's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah, it's a whole other story. So they decide finally that she is able to practice medicine. And this happens because of all the issues with the doctor. This happens because there's a huge outbreak of smallpox. Mm-hmm. And she is the one in the community that doctor just kind of pissed out.
He
looks like
he saw smallpox and was gone. And he was gone. He left them dry. So all this time, high and dry. All this time he was really, he was trying to make a name for himself, right? He wasn't in medicine to really help people. He was in medicine to be famous, right? And to be able to write a book and look at me and da da da. And that's how they treated him. Like he was a star until they had smallpox. And he was like, I'm gone.
He peaced out. So Lady Tan is the one
who,
and she had a newborn at the time, a little boy.
Yeah.
She had herself an heir. But she was taking care of all of these people in the community with smallpox. And so after coming out of that,
I just want to touch on one part about the smallpox. It just reminded me when I was reading it about COVID, right? So she made sure that her daughters were okay. She had three, two of them were okay because they used to do this practice. Well, back then it would have been today. It would be today's version of a vaccine, right? Mm-hmm. But her youngest daughter didn't get it. And so when she came back in town, because she had left out of town, she came back in town, she found her two daughters were okay, but her youngest wasn't. And she had a newborn in her hand. So she dropped the newborn off to the mother-in-law and was like, please take care of him because I got to help these people. And so I think about like all the nurses and doctors who had to do that during COVID, even being away from them, because just like smallpox, you know, you can't just treat it and then go home. Some people stayed away from their families. So they made sure that they didn't infect their families.
Yeah. Yep.
So they can help and take care of, you know, the population who needed them. So it just made me have that much more appreciation for the workers during that time, because you guys took good care of us and we appreciate it to the detriment of you and your own family.
Yep.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say that before we go to the next part, but go ahead.
Yeah. So she finally, when they came out of that, and they did lose some people in the community, but
her husband's concubine and child died.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And one of the concubines, she and her son died.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got it so bad that she had scars all over her face, and they were like, well, you're ugly now, so goodbye. So they kicked her and her daughter out of the community. Mm-hmm. When she'd pretty much been there her whole life.
And she helped during that time. Like
she helped during that time. But that's a whole other side story. But finally, Lady Tan, her mother-in-law was like, okay, you can start practicing medicine. You can help women in the community, but you are not to leave the compound, essentially.
Exactly.
And so she spent the rest of her life as a woman doctor helping the community.
Yeah. And secretly going to help other people. Yes. She wasn't supposed to.
Yes. They're not society people either. Yeah. It was everybody. And so 15th century China, woman doctor, amazing.
Not only that, but she lives in, you know, a country where there's an emperor. So at any point in time, you could be killed. Her best friend was about to be killed because
she had a miscarriage in front of
his wife, and he was like, that brought too much trauma to my wife.
Yeah,
I'm gonna kill you. Mm-hmm. Right? And so like off with her head at any given moment.
And so being a woman is like,
exactly. So ooh. Even here, like in the United States of America, you know, we had to fight for everything that we have. The penalty wasn't death for the most part, depending on the error, but for the most part, it wasn't death.
I'm trying to think of like a moment in time, but no, it was,
you know, it wasn't really like, you know, one person saying, and not saying that people didn't get killed or murdered or whatever, because people didn't like what they were doing. And I'm saying that. I'm saying coming from the government saying, you're going to get killed for doing this. So not only was she doing it, but she was doing it where at any moment, if the emperor found out what she was doing, he could be like off with her head and no one could do anything about it.
He could just change his mind.
Exactly. Very flippant. So it just shows the courage and the willpower she had and the drive she had to help others. So I really love that. I love the story between her and her friend. You'll see the highs and the lows when you read the book, because that's what relationships are sometimes. You have highs and you have lows, but they stay together, and then they were able to enjoy the later end of their lives together, open. They didn't have to secretly go see each other. They were able to spend time.
She lived until she was like 96 years old.
96 years old.
It's old now.
Yes, it is.
That's old now.
It is. And when her grandmother was still living, her grandmother was helped with a smallpox outbreak. But her mother, her grandmother, she was old too, but they're viable. Like you may be 96, but you're walking and talking and functional and able to do things. Yep. And we think about like starting at 70, 80s and 90s, where they're not like just this vibrant person still. Yep. So I plan on being that vibrant person. Doing all the things I need to do to be able to do that. But this was a great read for so many different reasons. Learn about different culture, learn about their practices, but then also not only to see a woman to be able to defy odds and be able to practice medicine at that time, that was huge, but then seeing a relationship and a bond between two women, that was really good as well.
It had all the stuff in there that, you know, we're seeking out.
Yeah,
definitely. About.
So we wanted to share with you because we thought it was great.
Yeah.
And
amazing woman.
I know. I know.
Amazing woman. So pick up the book. I got mine at Target, and actually it was a signed copy, which is pretty fun. But if you do Audible versions, they have that. You listen to it, right?
I had Audible. And you bought it. The book, but I got the book from Amazon.
Okay.
And mine says inside. So that was what we're reading. Go out, do Audible. If you're an Audible person, download it, grab it from Target or Amazon.
Thank you. Until next time. Bye.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us.
For more information, check out the links below and join the conversation on our socials.
We'd love to hear from you and any additional fun facts that you may have. I'm Kenitha.
And I'm Erica. Make sure to tune in next month for another episode of
The Queens of Effing Everything.